You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, and I have a very special guest on today. Chris Grenham of the NBA and college basketball for SB Nation. He is joining the show. He is bringing his expertise to the Locked On Wolves listeners. Chris, thank you so much for joining the show, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know there's plenty of NBA action going on that you need to cover.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on. Look forward to it.
Excellent. And so today we're going to really kind of dig into the Timberwolves division. Nuggets, the Denver Nuggets, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Utah Jazz are all fighting for playoff spots. You have Oklahoma City, they've dropped to seventh, and you have the Timberwolves who have bumped up to the third spot, and those are all very much in flux. There's only a few games separating the two spots outside the playoffs to the two spots inside the playoffs. So you have Denver and Utah sitting right outside the playoffs, trying to make a push inside to the playoff race. Minnesota trying to hang on to that third seed, even though they've lost Jimmy Butler. I'm going to jump right in here, Chris. This is the most interesting division in basketball, I would say, right now.
Yeah, by far. I would definitely agree. I mean, the Western Conference in itself is just ridiculous. I think right now there's eight teams within 4.5 games of each other pushing for those final six spots. So, but the Northwest division specifically is by far the most compelling. I mean, you've got every team in the division. All five teams are above 500, which that's the only division in the NBA where that's the case. Utah hopefully can keep up. You know, they made a big time push before the All-Star break and they've gone 1-2 post All-Star break. So, you know, hopefully they can keep it up. But, yeah, I mean, all these teams are right in the thick of it, I know, as of now. I think it's just Utah that's on the outside looking in. Utah's sitting at 31-30 at the 10 seed. But, yeah, I mean, there's no question this is the most compelling division in the NBA by far.
And just some interesting games down the stretch here. You were writing actually for SB Nation for the Oklahoma City page about the game that the Thunder had against Orlando. You've got Utah, who they had an 11-game win streak going into the All-Star break. Really, if you're looking at the talent on these teams, Minnesota obviously with the injury, Jimmy Butler, Paul Millsap has been injured the majority of the year, but he is supposed to come back maybe at the end of this season for the Denver Nuggets, could make them interesting. A rookie is leading the Utah Jazz, and then you have the trio in Oklahoma City. Are the Thunder the most interesting team? And I was watching, I am a proud League Pass owner, so I try and watch all the basketball games I can. Watching that game against the Orlando Magic, it seems like Russell Westbrook can make all of these games interesting despite the outside storylines, just because of the kind of the fractioning he has with the other teams and the way he makes these games compelling.
Yeah, he definitely can. I mean, he has that ability. He's just so explosive and aggressive, and that's the thing. They need his energy. Without his energy, you know, the Thunder are totally screwed. And they've had their issues since losing Andre Roberson. Their defense has been lacking a lot lately, especially around the perimeter. You mentioned the game the other night against the Orlando Magic. The Magic came out, and I think they went 14-20 with six threes in the first quarter. And, you know, the Magic aren't a great team, and the Thunder aren't a team that should be giving up numbers like that, because they still have defensive-minded guys like Paul George, who's like, you know, a rich man's 3-and-D kind of player. So, yeah, Russell Westbrook can make all these games interesting, but if they want to really complete the deal and go into the playoffs, you know, confidently, I think they're going to need to figure out that defense. And there's a lot of talk this morning about Corey Brewer potentially coming in, and you know, he would help a little bit. He's kind of just an extra wing to pick up, you know, that final 15th roster spot for them. But I think really the defense has to get straightened out. The perimeter defense specifically has to get straightened out beforehand. But like you said, yeah, I would definitely say they're probably the most intriguing out of this bunch. But Portland is definitely making a push. You know, they've won 6 of 7. They've won 4 in a row. They're 5th in the West right now and only a game back of the Spurs. So you could make a case for them being the most interesting as well.
Well, and too, it seems like the play of the Thunder throughout most of the season, I know there have been exceptions, but throughout a majority of the season, it seems like the best version of this Thunder offense has been when Russell Westbrook averages one of those triple-doubles where he only scores 15 points. When he's contributing in the assist column, when he's pulling defenses, and then they're making offensive off of that, particularly in Paul George, when he's able to get Paul George shots because of his playmaking. And two, you have Carmelo Anthony kind of having a come-to-Jesus moment a little bit during these games where he's not taking more than 11 to 12 shots in the game. That seems to be the best version of their offense. Is that where the, kind of the sweet spot for the Oklahoma City Thunder, that if they can just hit that, they could really explode, where Russell Westbrook is doing more than just scoring and Carmelo Anthony is kind of controlling the shots and Paul George is kind of the under-the-radar, really great offensive piece that they have for them?
Yeah, oddly enough, I mean, you know, if you've got a team with Russell Westbrook, you're always thinking he's going to be the top scorer, mm-hmm. putting up triple-doubles, but you're right. Oddly enough, when Paul George is putting up 26, 28 points, and you've got Russ going for a triple-double with, like, you know, like you said, 16 points, that's kind of when they're at the best, when he is creating for his teammates and getting guys like Steven Adams a 20 and 10 night, and, you know, he's driving and kicking out to Paul George, who was going, you know, 9 for 20 like he did the other night or that kind of thing. So, you know, that's probably when they're at their best, I would say. And, again, they kind of go in these weird ebbs and flows. Like the other night against Orlando, they weren't really that great, but their bench, who has been pretty poor over the last month to 2 months, came out and scored like 40 points. So, I mean, it was a little random, but they are kind of scratching and clawing without Roberson and finding ways to get it done, and really, it shouldn't be the case when you have three all-stars in your lineup, but that's what they're going to have to do for the remainder of the year. They're going to have to take it a game at a time and kind of scratch and claw and figure it out. But I think they're all embracing these new roles. Like you said, Carmelo is no longer taking 20 shots a game, and he's embraced that role, which I didn't think he would do at the beginning of the year, but he's embraced it. You know, the other night he had only 9 points. Both him and Russ were in single digits the other night, which is something you'll barely ever see. But I think the fact that they've all embraced their roles really helps a lot. But yeah, going back to your main point, I think when Paul George is kind of serving as that 1A option rather than, you know, the second option, I think that's really when they're at their best.
Switching gears a little bit here, Denver, the LA Clippers, and Utah, all kind of right there in that 8 through 10 spots, right outside the playoffs or just inside the playoffs. Of those three teams, which team do you like the best?
That's interesting. I mean, I thought I would say Denver. You know, if you were to ask me this 2 weeks ago, I definitely would have said Denver. And it's interesting. You got a matchup with the Nuggets and the Clippers last night where, you know, the Boban show kind of took over. But I have trouble with their defense right now. You know, they've had 11 straight teams, I think it is, that have shot 50-plus percent from the floor. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Last night they gave up 72 points in the paint. They're really having trouble guarding basically anyone at the moment, and it's really not looking too great. The Clippers, on the other hand, are actually playing pretty well at the moment, and I wouldn't have, like I said before, I really wouldn't have said that a couple weeks ago after they traded away Blake. But Tobias Harris has come in and played nicely. Like I said before, Boban has too, and Lou Williams is great. So I don't think I trust Denver's defense at this point. They got Paul Millsap back last night. So, you know, he's been out for 3 months, and that could certainly help that issue. So maybe this is a different story 2 weeks from now. Going to Utah, they've looked pretty iffy after the All-Star break. They're 1-2. And they've had these kind of mental lapses a lot, at least in the last few games that I've watched. Joe Ingles is going to have to get hot again, and Jay Crowder's been good. They're 2.5 games, I think, behind the Nuggets right now, but they've been turning the ball over a lot, and those mental errors happen when, you know, you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell leading the way. It's just a younger core, and that's going to happen. So, surprisingly, I guess I would say that right now I'm probably most confident in the Clippers, but that could very well change in the next week. You never really know. Because if Denver can figure out their defense and Paul Millsap can jump back in and really fit the mold, they would probably be my number one team. But right now, I'll say the Clippers.
I think when we look back at the 2017-18 season, the Clippers, even over the Cavaliers, will be one of the stories that is maybe the weirdest team in recent memory, just with all the change that they've had and all the turnover. And they start out the year by bringing in all these B level pieces in after Chris Paul left to the Rockets, and then an influx of even more B level pieces came to the team after the Blake Griffin team trade, and they're still managing to win games and still a fringe playoff team even despite all of the turnover and the change. It's a really funky roster.
Yeah, it really is. I think they've played like 20-plus guys. They've had 20-plus guys suit up for them this year and play. It's interesting, like you said, but it's pretty impressive nonetheless. I mean, I'm happy they stuck with Lou Williams because, of course, they wouldn't be here without him. And I think the fact that they can still make a push after dumping off Blake Griffin is really, really impressive. And, you know, DeAndre Jordan's obviously still going to do his thing, but they've got these guys like Montrezl Harrell and now Boban and Wesley Johnson's are playing really well. These guys who are kind of coming out of the woodwork and playing really well. This is a team in the beginning of the year where I was watching them, you know, down that black hole that is League Pass late at night. I'd be watching their games, and I'd be looking at some of these guys like, who are these people? And suddenly they're in the thick of the playoff race. So I guess that's just part of the chaos that is the Western Conference. But, yeah, they've been a lot of fun. It's a pretty cool storyline.
Hey, don't shame yourself for going down there. The League Pass is a wonderful place where more people should find. No, I'm just kidding. Nobody should watch basketball. I'm assuming as much as you do, and I know for a fact as much as I do.
It's really, really unhealthy.
This is also the only scenario where Doc Rivers actually start or plays this many young guys is in this scenario where he's got this much turnover. Looking at just kind of the broad picture of the Western Conference here, before we take a break for some sponsors, is there a team that has surprised you just overall? When I think of this, I think of New Orleans, the Pelicans, even despite Boogie going down, Anthony Davis kind of propelling this team into the middle of the playoff run. But is there a team in the Western Conference that has really surprised you this season?
I mean, yeah, the Pelicans have to stand out right off the bat. I mean, they've won six in a row. They're playing San Antonio next, so maybe that could come to a halt. But you have to assume when Boogie went down, they were in trouble, right? I mean, they were they would have to heavily rely on Anthony Davis, and they didn't really have many secondary options. And, you know, during the streak, I think he's averaging 42 points a game and 15 rebounds. He's been absolutely ridiculous, and he's totally, you know, thrown a wrench into the MVP chatter. But they have to stick out, but that's kind of a generic answer. If we're going to stick with the Northwest or division theme, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Blazers, just because they were really like at least to me, maybe this was an outsider's point of view, but they were kind of a two-man roster earlier in the season when I would look at them, you know, with Lillard and McCollum, and that was basically it. But you've got guys like Nurkic stepping up, and last night Shabazz Napier in like 21 minutes, he had 20 points. So you've got these random spurts of contributions that are very, very timely for them, and they've just really, really impressed me. If you were to tell me, you know, a month ago that the Trailblazers would currently be sixth in the Western Conference and only 2.5 games back from the Spurs, I probably would have laughed at you. So I think they're really impressive. You know, they won 6 of 7, so that's probably the most noteworthy team besides New Orleans.
No, yeah, and I think when you look at the Northwest, everybody talks about the Timberwolves because of their surge from 31 games last season, Oklahoma City because of the trio they have there, the Denver Nuggets with Jokic and Murray and some young pieces there that are fun to watch, Utah and Donovan Mitchell, and maybe forget is the wrong word, but there's almost people getting accustomed to Damian Lillard kind of and CJ McCollum kind of dragging this weird front court that they always seem to have since LaMarcus Aldridge left to the playoffs and then getting bounced right away. But this is a team that actually has some young stretch guys in the front court that could make it interesting for a playoff series if they're not, again, the eighth seed and having to play the Warriors right away.
Yeah, seriously. I totally agree. I mean, I'm a big fan of Zach Collins, and Noah Vonleh is a local Massachusetts guy for me, at least, so I like him, but he's not there anymore. So you got Caleb Swanigan, and I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Nurkic has tortured the Thunder in the games that they've played, so I know plenty about him, and he's pretty great. Al-Farouq Aminu is, you know, always solid, too. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep this up. I mean, they still are relying pretty heavily upon Lillard. I think in February he averaged, like, 31 a game or something like that. So, you know, they are still relying on him, but like you said, they're getting those solid contributions from that front court, guys like Nurkic and Aminu, and even like an Ed Davis, who is playing close to 20 minutes a game for them and giving them 5 points a game, you know, whatever. So they're getting these contributions, and I would hope that maybe this could be a different story in terms of the playoffs this year, just because it's kind of a fun storyline.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break for some sponsors before we get down to the brass tacks on the Timberwolves. So we've had Chris on, a writer for SB Nation. He knows the ins and outs of the NBA and covers them regularly. You can find his work on the NBA site on SBNation.com. We've been talking about the Western Conference and kind of covering the broad strokes of the Western Conference and the surprise teams. Now let's talk a little bit about the Timberwolves here. We are the Lockdown Wolves after all, so we should probably cover the hometown team. Timberwolves looked pretty good, looked really good in December, had a great start to January, tailed off before the All-Star break. I was one of the many guys covering the Timberwolves who said if they can just get to the All-Star break, I think with the coach they have and the coaching staff and the way they kind of play and the minutes they pull every night as starters, they can kind of revamp and rejuice a little bit over the All-Star break and just jump back into the last 21 games of the season and really make a push to the top of the Western Conference. Now, they are the third seed as we record this podcast, but Jimmy Butler is now out. You got to depend on the young guys and some veterans to pull this thing through to the end of the regular season. Just initial take, what are your thoughts on the Timberwolves after 38 wins and with 18 games to go?
Well, first, I definitely think they're lucky that they've played so many games. That has to be an advantage for them with this Butler injury. Mm-hmm. My second thought is that their schedule coming up is brutal. I think they've got Portland, the Celtics, the Jazz, the Warriors, the Wizards, the Spurs, the Rockets, and the Clippers. I think all straight. They don't have any easy games in between there. So that is brutal. They've got the same amount of losses as Pelicans and I think the Blazers. But again, that's just part of the cluster that is the Western Conference. So you just got to then assume, you know, can you trust Cat and Wiggins going forward? They've got a good net rating as a team, but that, again, is with Jimmy Butler. And I don't know if this is me not knowing the real ins and outs of the Bulls because, you know, I haven't done too much with them this year. But my real question is if they, you know, whether it's the coaching staff or the front office or whoever were to, you know, handle the situation, are they going to have the backbone to potentially tell Jimmy Butler to kind of relax? Because in terms of pushing to come back, that's where Jimmy Butler can kind of go into his psychotic mindset. Where, like, if you were to tell him he could determine it, he'd probably be like, yeah, I'll be good to go next week. And obviously that's not going to be good for the team in the long run if they're going to want to, you know, look at the longevity of this potential group. So that's really my main question. And, of course, Tibbs has never been one to, you know, soften players and be like, yeah, you got to, you know, take a couple extra games. Tibbs will bring him back whenever the hell he wants. So that's really my main question, is how they're going to handle this Butler situation, if they're going to try and rush him back before the playoffs. I think it's like a six-week window. I could be wrong. That's what they're saying at the moment. But that's really my main question, is how they're going to handle the Butler situation.
Yeah, when he went down and right after the surgery, they were saying the projection was he'll probably come back with about 1 to 2 regular season games left. And my big fear is that they rush him back, because obviously the way they're setting this up is you kind of intend, you assume that they're going to give extensions to Butler and Towns, right? And so they've already maxed out on Wiggins, and they have Teague for another couple seasons.
Right.
This team is kind of built to be good, you hope, for the next 3 to 4 years, not just this season. And so the worst mistake you could make is trying to mortgage a little bit their future next year to get a better playoff seating this year. I think Butler's going to make it back for the playoffs, and the Timberwolves are not going to fall out of the playoff race just because Butler's out for the next 21 games after the All-Star break. And so those you can put out of your mind right away. And so then – and you're talking, too, about Butler and Tibbs and the way they approach the game and how they're fiercely competitive. Really, it comes down to team doctors and the agent for Jimmy Butler have both got to be in his ear telling him that it's not worth it to rush back and then kind of pull the John Wall where you come back too early and then you really mess up the knee and you're out for even longer the second time around. And it's got to be up to them because the agent, his mindset has got to be you're trying to play for a contract next season, and if you really damage the ACL, then you're out till next year's All-Star break. And the team doctors just got to do their job and make sure that he knows his timetable and that he's not trying to jump ahead of it. So the worst thing that could happen isn't Timberwolves losing games, even though their stretch is 10 of the next 18 games is against playoff opponents, and two of the non-playoff opponents are the Utah Jazz, who are right there on the fringe. But the worst thing that could happen is Jimmy Butler coming back too soon and then really damaging his knee for the future and specifically for the playoffs this year too.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough because my mind immediately goes right to that, and it goes to the Tibbs-Butler combo, and it's a scary thought. But you just got, like you said, you got to hope that they're chattering in his ear the whole time, just tell him to play it safe. And if you're, you know, any sort of agent in sports, you're in his ear right now, and you're talking for the full span of these next 5 to 6 weeks, saying, "Hey, be smart about this. Pull the Vince Carter approach, where be smart in the middle of your career here, and potentially, you know, you could play until you're 41." So that would be ideal. And again, they've got a really tough schedule coming up over the next, you know, whatever how many games with all those playoff teams. But I think they'll be okay. You know, they're not going to fall out of the playoff race. They'll probably fall out of that third spot with the Spurs right behind them. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle Butler. But in terms of the playoffs, yeah, they'll be fine. You just got to hope that they stay on the top tier of that mess that is the middle of the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. An outsider's perspective. You cover the NBA as a whole, so an outside perspective on the Timberwolves. Do you think from the kind of defensive production that we've seen and how Towns has been working on that part of his game and while staying fairly elite as an offensive player, do you think that Towns is enough to keep this team, at least keep their heads above water for the remaining 18 games of this season?
Yeah, I think he is. And I have gone on the Towns roller coaster through his career. When he first came out, I was a big-time supporter. Big time fan. I was all over him, and I loved him. But then his defensive game just really started to let me down. It really made me sad because I had such big hopes for him. But now he's dragging me back up, and has kind of, you know, reinvented his defensive game this year, like you said. And it's really impressive, and it's great to see out of a young guy like him. And to that point, yes, I do think he can keep him over the water. But I think he's going to need guys like Teague and Wiggins to elevate their game a little bit, just because, you know, they're losing a guy who plays 37 minutes a game. He averages 22 points a game, 5 assists. I think he's like 5.5 rebounds. So, of course, they're all going to need to step up, but with Cat at the top and Wiggins as that second option, I think they'll be fine to stay above water. And, you know, they've got other guys to lean back on, like Jamal Crawford and Gorgui Dieng and stuff. So I think they'll be okay, but with Towns at the top and his reinvented defensive efficiency, yeah, I think he can lead the way and keep them above water. Excuse me.
Well, and that's kind of the key there too, is that you want to flow a bunch of this offense through Towns. But at the end of the day, it's got to be a joint effort. You saw it against, and again, these are terrible opponents, so maybe this isn't the best measuring stick, but against the Bulls and the Kings over the last couple wins, they had 20-point performances from Wiggins and from Teague, and you had Taj Gibson playing really well over both those games, and Bielitsa had a great game against the Kings, and against the Bulls, you had Crawford with, I believe he had 19 points against the Bulls. So it's got to be a joint performance when your top defensive player and offensive kind of playmaker in Butler hits the deck and is out for the rest of the regular season. It's got to be a bunch of guys. It can't just be one guy anymore.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a little bit of an adjustment for Tibbs, maybe having to dig into his bench a little bit because, you know, everyone knows he doesn't really like to do that. So his coaching ability will definitely be tested here. I trust him. You know, Tibbs is a good coach. He's got a very unique style. He's an interesting coach, but I think he'll be fine. But yeah, it's got to be a joint effort for sure.
All righty. So before we head out here, I wanted to ask you two things. First, I want to get you, what are you most excited for in the remaining few games of the NBA season? It went by so quickly already. What is the one thing you're looking forward to most watching throughout the rest of the regular NBA season? And what stuff do you have to plug? What articles do you have coming out that we can promote here on the show for you?
Ooh, that's a tough. Well, you know, the middle of both conferences, the East and the West, I kind of dabble in both conferences in terms of content. So I just want to see how this absolute mess is going to, you know, fizzle out in
murky water.
Yeah, a lot of murky water there. And of course, I'm biased because I've been covering the Thunder all year long. And so that's going to be the most interesting, in my opinion, and really the Northwest Division as a whole. I know we started with that, but, you know, you got all five teams above 500 there, a lot of them towards the bottom of this playoff race, which the bottom is essentially starts at the 4-5 spot, which is insane to say, but that is the case. So I'm going to really be interested to see the Thunder if they can figure this out, because they've looked really, really good at times and extremely, extremely ugly at times. So that's going to be interesting how the Wolves handle this Butler situation, and if the Tibbs and Butler lunatic mindset takes over, and maybe he'll be playing this time next week. We don't really know what'll happen there. So in my opinion, I hope they, you know, push him until the playoffs and they don't bring him back too soon, because I myself am actually a Washington Wizards fan, so I lived through that with the John Wall knee, and it was not fun at all. So,
but you have Bradley Beal.
You got Bradley Beal, you got Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre, man. What else do you need? It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to that. I'm really hoping that the Thunder and the T-Wolves can somehow meet in the playoffs, because I think that would be a ridiculously fun series. I think that would be a blast. So if we could be spoiled enough to see that early on, I would really love that. In terms of content, in terms of plug, you can go to welcometoloudcity.com. That's the Thunder site for SB Nation. That's where my Thunder Views column comes out about, say, 15 hours after every Thunder game. It kind of looks at what just happened and a little look ahead. The rest of my stuff, yeah, can be found on SB Nation's NBA site. I do a lot of work with the Celtics and the Washington Wizards as well. But, you know, you've got a good podcast host here, so keep listening to Locked on Wolves for sure. And it'll be a fun stretch down the road for sure.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming on. Definitely go check out the SB Nation content. I've been working on those sites as well for a long time, and whatever writers you come across on SB Nation, they're always really great reads and really fun to pay attention to. Make sure you go check out the Oklahoma City Thunder SB Nation page. Check out Chris's content there as well. And give him some love on the SB Nation. Give him some favorable comments there. Go check all that out, and thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.